You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye the Movie Guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we take a trip out to the suburbs as we cover our top five favorite suburban movies.
Suburban?
Yeah, that's a word.
No, it's not.
I made one up. It's suburban movies.
You don't just get to make up words.
When you're on 201st episode of Cinema Jaw, you get to make up words.
That's ridiculous.
We are covering our top five favorite movies about suburbs,
suburbia, Rye.
Suburbia.
There you go.
And we're doing this in honor.
Where are you from?
I came from the suburbs of Chicago.
Which in particular?
Cicero.
You know where I'm from originally?
Connecticut.
Yes. A suburb of New York City called Danbury, Connecticut.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, I was from a suburb of Danbury called New Fairfield, Connecticut. It's this podunk town, one stoplight. It was great.
Interesting.
I have a lot of love for the suburbs. We'll find out all about that this episode.
And it's going to be an interesting topic. I know I actually picked some dark movies for this list.
Yeah. It's funny. There's a lot of dark movies about the suburbs.
There sure are. Also an album by Arcade Fire entitled The Suburbs.
Really?
True story. Hmm. We are doing this in honor of a guest who's going to be joining us a little bit later in the show, Curtis Gilbert from P3 Media Works. He has a new film coming out. It's actually, I shouldn't say a film, it's a web series.
Yeah, those guys at P3 are great on the web series.
They are. They obviously, we've had Frank Zitti on. He did the web series Black. It's now into production on its second season. This new one coming out, entitled Convergence, was described to us as X-Files meets the suburbs.
I'm going to throw in some X-Files music right here.
I used to love that music right there.
I know, me too.
I'd get so excited because you knew it was X-Files time and Mulder and Scully were going to bust some guy.
Back in the day, that was like the hottest show on TV.
Yep.
Before we got into this golden age of television, X-Files was probably the best thing going.
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah. It sure was. But yeah, I know this Convergence web series, it has to do with sort of also with renewable energy. So I wonder how they tied this all together.
It's going to be interesting to talk to Curtis. And listeners might notice that we sound a little different this week. And that's because I sent Elias on a little vacation, Ryan.
What?
Yeah.
This was not run
by
me.
I don't know. So after that whole fiasco with him stuffing us into the Jawbox on episode 200, I figured maybe it was time for Elias to take a little trip.
Wow.
Yeah. So I threw a lock on the Jawbox, slapped a couple of stamps on it, and I shipped him off. I shipped him to Canada.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, he's going to be surprised.
I told him we were going to do some cross promotion on the film Snowpiercer. So I sent him out by train. He's
awesome.
He's on the Jawbox.
Wow. No, we are flying solo this week as far as engineering goes.
That's right. Yeah. So if it sounds like crap, you have me to blame, folks.
Matt is sitting as in usual. Front of the board. He's doing a little bit more than he used to.
And those of you who know my level of ADD will know that giving me more than two buttons to push is definitely not a good idea.
And with Elias not present, boy, we're in uncharted territories. We got a lot going too.
He needed a vacation, Ryan.
We go eye for an eye on The Giver. We got out and saw Guardians of the Galaxy. I can't wait to hear your review on that.
I can't wait to give it.
I know Matt has to have a positive review of that. Plus, a new film coming out entitled Into the Storm coming out this weekend. Got a review for you there. Like we said, our top five favorite suburb movies. And in honor of The Expendables 3 coming out, you'll be taking Curtis on in Expendables 3 movie trivia. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is dropping out this weekend.
Yeah.
And after episode 200, you actually said to me, I can't believe you're ignoring the Turtles. And I said, I think it's just a terrible idea and the movie's going to bomb, and I'm pretty sure about that.
Well, listen, terrible idea or not, the movie's going to be a huge success.
I just can't see it. I think the crowd is dissipated for this.
No, I mean, they turn out in droves for Michael Bay films, so why not?
Cinema War. Oof. Curtis is going to have his hands full there.
Yeah.
With Turtles.
That's right. And some ninjas.
So, Matt, we are going to interview Curtis in a minute. He's calling in on the phone.
That's right.
And we got to give him a little time.
Yeah.
So
he's got to get his look together.
Exactly.
For the phone call.
So it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by...
The new 400 Theaters. The new 400 Theaters has the best prices on first-run movies in the city of Chicago. They have a full liquor bar, and you can check out what's playing at thenew400.com.
Eye for an Eye this week, The Giver. In a seemingly perfect community, without war, pain, suffering, differences, or choice, a young boy is chosen to learn from an elderly man about the true pain and pleasure of the real world. The film is based on the best-selling book by Arthur Lewis Lawry and stars Jeff Bridges, Meryl Streep, Katie Holmes, and newcomer Brenton Thwaites. Matt, interested or ignore on The Giver?
So this is the start of Oscar season, huh? I got to be honest. That sounds boring. Ignore. I'm probably going to get a lot of crap. This is the film of the year, right?
No, I really don't think so. I wouldn't go as far as Oscar season. This book is actually, I think, the first on a series of young adult novels.
Oh, Get Out, really? They've never done that before.
When I read what it was, I got this thing from Barnes & Noble a little ways back. Books about to become movies. And those are sometimes fun to jump on before you see them filmed.
Oh, sure.
And I did jump on a couple of them. I read Unbroken and I read This Is Where I Leave You. But I sort of saw who was all in The Giver, Meryl Streep, Jeff Bridges. But then when I read what the book was about, I was like, God, we've seen this so much already.
Is it about a girl who gets trapped in a life or death situation?
But change it with a young boy and he's got to choose his destiny. And to be honest with you, I'm ignoring this one as well.
Is it hungrily divergent?
Two ignores for The Giver. Hopefully they prove us wrong.
Yeah.
I did see the trailer for Into the Woods.
Mm-hmm.
Looks very interesting. Meryl Streep, Johnny Depp could be really interesting.
Hmm.
So
I haven't seen that trailer yet. I'll check it out tonight. It out. Yeah.
Speaking of new movies, me and Matt got out and caught Guardians of the Galaxy.
We have to stop Ronan.
How? I have a plan.
You've got a plan.
Yes.
First of all, you're copying me from when I said I had a plan.
No, I'm not. People say that all the time. It's not that unique of a thing to say.
Secondly, I don't even believe you have a plan.
I have part of a plan.
What percentage of a plan do you have?
You don't get to ask questions after the nonsense you pulled on Nowhere.
I just saved Quill.
We've already established that you destroying the ship that I'm on is not saving me.
When did we establish?
Like 3 seconds ago.
No, I wasn't listening. I was thinking of something else.
Oh.
She's right. You don't get an opinion. What percentage?
I don't know. 12%.
12%?
That's a fake laugh.
It's real.
Totally fake.
That is the most real, authentic, hysterical laugh of my entire life because that is not a plan.
It's barely a concept.
You're taking their side?
I am Groot.
So what? It's better than 11%. What the hell does that have to do with anything?
Thank you, Groot. Thank you. See? Groot's the only one of you who has a clue.
Whew, Matt, finally, a comic book movie that does not take itself too seriously. Guardians was probably, get this, Matt, the most fun I had with a quote-unquote summer movie this year. Not knowing anything about these characters, walking into the theater, I instantly felt a connection to the band of misfits that include a walking tree named Groot and a talking raccoon named Rocket. Director James Gunn succeeded in his toughest challenge, getting the tone right. I thought it was absolutely pitch perfect, Matt. The story unfolds organically as Peter Quill, aka Star-Lord, is being paid to retrieve a mysterious orb. The importance and power of this orb is not revealed until the midway point in the film. There is plenty of humor and action present. If I had one complaint, and it's a minor complaint, it was almost too much action for me. For my liking, I would have liked to see them trim a few of those gun blasts and a few of those explosions. But all that said, I really, really did enjoy this movie. In fact, I loved it. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 3.5 Jaws for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wow. So, Rye, are you a true believer yet?
Of?
No. There is no of. It's just a capital T, capital B, a true believer. Excelsior, you know, Stan Lee. Marvel.
Oh, I liked Stan Lee's cameo. That was nice.
That was good.
give me your take on Guardians.
Guardians of the Galaxy has got to be the most fun that I've had at the theater since the Avengers. I loved with a capital L. And here's the thing. I'm sure people who listen to this show know that I was predestined to like this film. And I knew that going in. I'm like, I'm going to like this. I sat down and I'm really going to like it. I was surprised by just how much I really liked it. It was fantastic. And I think the heart and the core of this film was the relationship between Rocket and Groot. I mean, without those two, those were the potential Jar Jars of this movie. And it's also very fair to make Star Wars comparisons. This is a lot less like your typical Marvel Avengers superhero guys in capes flying around kind of movie, and a lot more like your Star Wars space adventures. And you had mentioned Indiana Jones when we were driving around earlier, and I think that's also a fair comparison. Less superhero-y, more action, and more space adventure.
Space adventure is a great word to use. For the jawheads out there that are into the indie films that I'm always selecting each week, and they stay away from these Marvels, I'm glad that you brought that up, because it isn't so much superpowers as much as it is a space adventure film.
Right, yeah. And there's, I mean, some people have different abilities and whatnot, but it never feels superhero-ish.
Right.
You know, nobody's in tights, and they're not rescuing damsels in distress or anything like that, or not too much.
The chemistry that these misfits, as they eventually become called the Guardians of the Galaxy in sort of a humorous way, it was spectacular. I thought they worked so well as a team. I mean, obviously, they're playing opposite a couple of CGI characters with the raccoon and the tree.
I am Groot.
But it worked. It fully worked.
I loved Groot, by the way. I want a little Groot on my desk.
I don't know how much it was important at all for it to be voiced by Vin Diesel. I know it says this in the trailer, and Groot voiced by Vin Diesel. I
mean, featuring,
All he says is, I am Groot.
I am Groot. He says it in different inflections, though, you know? This film, even though it's a continuation of the Marvel, I think we're in phase two right now, it does seem a little detached from the rest of the Marvel universe. And, oh, I remember what I wanted to say. The soundtrack here is absolutely phenomenal, right out of left field. I did not expect such a great soundtrack.
Well, what's interesting, too, is that this film takes place in the future. So there's pop cultural references to sort of the 80s, 90s.
No, it's modern day.
No, it's like 20... What year was it?
It's the opening scene is 1988.
Okay, well, but that's when he was just a young boy.
Right.
Yeah, so...
And then it says
2000...
Years. It's actually a little bit in the past.
Okay, so anyways... That being said, the soundtrack that you're saying, anyways, is a lot from like what his mom liked. So there's a lot of stuff like from the 70s and such. And then when they're in space, there's a lot of pop cultural references since Peter Quill came from Earth.
Right. Yes. And finally, we get to see Josh Brolin throw down as Thanos, which is kind of the through line, right? To the it's really the only through line in this picture to the other Marvel films, because we did see Thanos at the very end of Avengers.
Oh, see? You got to fill me in on all these things.
Okay,
so wait, for a second, you're telling me that the Guardians of the Galaxy, their world is going to mix in with the other Avengers world.
Yes. No, Thanos becomes a very big threat to the entire Marvel universe, including Earth. And yeah, we're going to see the Avengers, we're going to see the Guardians, and we're going to see Doctor Strange and whoever else, Ant-Man, everybody else that they introduce between now and then. It's a big crossover coming, Rye.
No, I don't like it as much.
This is such an achievement. We've never seen this kind of canon on the big screen before, that they've been able to put this through line through all these different movies. I think we're at like 9 or 10 now.
I mean, for my money, Guardians, I liked that there were no big superheroes involved. That's
why
I think I enjoyed this film so much.
I agree, actually. It was somewhat refreshing. And I think that you'll get that. That's the thing about comic books. They each have their own individual tone, but at some point they cross over, because you want to see Howard the Duck get in a fight with Wolverine, you know?
I don't.
And that, for those of you who know, was an in-joke, the Howard the Duck reference. But I absolutely love this movie. I think it's definitely the best summer movie that's come out this year. Probably one of my favorites of the year. It'll definitely be on my top 5 list at the end of the year. I'm giving it 4 Jaws.
Wow.
Yeah, it's another thing we should mention. This movie is extremely funny.
It is.
There's a lot of great comedy, but you said it didn't take itself too seriously. I thought it took itself seriously at the right moments. Like Ronan, the accuser, who's the main villain in the film, was terrifying. He was honestly like scary, like horror movie scary. But the rest of the film was very funny. It was just such... You got it right, Ryan. Pitch perfect.
Yeah, and when you're dealing with a cast of oddball characters such as this, and you want to put that balance of humor, but yet you're right, take it serious enough so that you're involved in, you know, the end point of the film. You've got to care at the end when this big action sequence is taking place. Glenn Close is in it.
Yeah. John C. Reilly. Yeah.
And they were great in there as well, yeah. too. And even John C. Reilly was almost in that perfect balance because he was almost like you were laughing at him, but he was serious at the same time.
Yeah. He got it so right.
They did.
I mean, it just goes to show you, and I'm so happy that this is happening because the comic books have been brilliant for years, and now finally a wider audience is getting to see, like, oh, what is this? This is really good. And you know, I have to admit, this is my confession of the show. I, as a big-time comic book reader, I've read Civil War, I've read most of the Marvel stuff, but I never did read The Infinity Gauntlet.
Well, that brings me to a confession I should make here, Matt.
Okay.
And I've heard Matt talk about a lot of things before, but I got a confession here. I don't even know what the Infinity Gauntlet is. It's the first time I've ever heard of it.
It's Thanos' glove.
Right.
That he puts the Infinity Gems in, and then he takes over the universe.
Really?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
No, it's awesome. You're going to love it. Trust me.
I'm not.
You're saying it's ridiculous, but then you always eat crow because every time you liked the movie, you liked Captain America. You like Captain America 2. You like Thor. You like Thor 2.
No, I don't like them all.
Which one didn't you like?
Thor 2. I did not like Thor 2. And I thought the first Captain America was only okay. I liked the second one better. All right. Whew. All right. 3.5 Jaws, yeah. though. I would say it's one of my favorite Marvel comic book movies in a long time.
And you know what? I actually I gave Elias a copy of this on his cell phone. I know we're not supposed to do that, but I did ship him to Canada, and I figured it'd be nice for him to have something to watch.
Did he call in?
He made a phone call.
Oh, boy.
It's so brave of the guy because his phone's about to die, and then how is he going to even see? But we should play it.
All right, let's play it.
Hey, Jawheads, it's Elias. After we recorded episode 200, Matt told me he was going to send me on a mission. We were going to cross-promote the movie Snowpiercer. So he threw me in the job box and put me on a train, and it's been a couple days. Luckily, I met some hobos who fed me along the way. They would stick some food through the hole in the job box. Unfortunately, that's not all they would always stick through. But the train stopped. It's at our final destination. I think I'm somewhere in northern Canada. But anyway, I was able to see the movie Guardians of the Galaxy. I won't go on too long because I'm trying to save my phone's battery to make it back home. So I just wanted to give it a solid 3 Jaws. I thought the beginning was slow, but towards the end it really brought it with some epic fight scenes and with stuff you haven't seen in other comic book movies. So that was really great. And yeah, hope to come back soon and talk more about the movie with you guys. Bye.
Oh, that Elias.
Yeah. So he's kind of splitting the difference between the two of us there.
Yeah. I like his opinion there, and I love that people are taking care of Elias on the Jawbox.
Very much so taking care of him. All right.
Maybe what we should do is guess where Elias is on the next week, because he's going to be out for a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. Like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Where in the world is Elias? Where are we shipping to next, Jawheads?
This is really funny. We could even make, like, some sort of hashtag game out of it.
Where's Elias?
Where is Elias?
Hashtag it, guys. Oh, where's Elias? We'll send you a shirt.
His family's going to call in. And where have you taken him?
He did say he'd call us every week, though. What a nice guy. All right, Matt. One other movie coming out in theaters this week, Into the Storm. And let me say this to Hollywood, if you are going to make a big movie with little to no plot other than a storm is about to hit a town, you have to at least make the special effects worth the price of admission. Into the Storm fails at this and pretty much everything it sets out to do. The film is shot in a found footage style from three perspectives. A, you have two brothers who are documenting graduation day at school. B, you have a group of professional storm chasers recording the event. And lastly, you have three quote-unquote YouTube goofballs that are recording themselves doing all kinds of things to get internet famous. The acting here, Matt, is terrible. The story, laughable. In these over-precautious times we live in, it seems events nowadays are canceled at the drop of rain. But here, with a humongous storm approaching the town, the school is not going to cancel the graduation ceremony. And better yet, Matt, the ceremony is being held outside. Get a load of this. Save your money, Jawheads. Skip Into the Storm. Even the fire tornado scene in the preview was a letdown. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, a single jaw. 1.
I just like to build on that by saying, Hollywood, if you're going to make a movie that's all effects and no plots, and you're going to make the effects crappy, at least throw some sharks into the tornadoes.
I know, and have a little bit more fun with it. You know what? I think Into the Storm, I don't know if it was going quite for the B-movie schlock and let's just go there and have a laugh with it, or was it trying to take itself serious enough to be a big-budget Hollywood film, and it ended up being right in the middle, and that's where you don't want to be. You either want to be able to go there and laugh at it, or you want to actually be terrified. And I sat there and was like, they missed that. They were just somewhere in the middle.
Did you see Sharknado, by the way?
I have not seen it yet.
Oh, my God. So it's on Hulu for free. You should watch it when you get home tonight. It's amazing. It's amazingly terrible.
It has to be better than Into the Storm. One jaw, stay far away from it, jawheads. All right, Matt, we got a great guest joining us here.
Yeah, let's bring him on.
So without further ado, Matt, we bring in our guest. He works at P3 Media Works. He actually helped create P3 Media Works. He has a new web series coming out called Convergence. They currently have a Kickstarter program set out for it. Curtis Gilbert, welcome to CinemaJaw.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So you're actually working on this project with your brother, Corey. Is that correct?
That is correct. For better or for worse, we are sibling business owners and creators of this. So, yeah.
Now, and you
take the good with the bad.
And so you also started P3 Media Works with your brother, correct?
That, again, for better or for worse, indeed, we did decide to go into business together, which they say never to do. and we've successfully proven all of the reasons why not to do that over the last 10 years. But we still get along just fine, nonetheless.
Well, I guess we'll start with P3 because we've obviously, CinemaJaw has been over to P3 Media Works. We interviewed Frank Zitti, who has the web series Blackout.
He has the web series Black.
Out.
Comma, out. Out,
yeah. Yeah. Best way to say it.
Right.
And we were over at your facilities there on Ashland. I guess, how did you guys get started with P3 Media Works?
Corey and I have been making movies since we were about 12. You know, back in that day, it was VHS cameras. So we kind of always knew what we wanted to do. Did it everything pretty much the wrong way at first, in that we started the business without any capital or backing or business backgrounds, kind of any common sense at that point in our lives, too. But we started it with just kind of pure passion and the love of what we do, and that proved to be just enough. That and some perseverance and several very bad years of business to finally get a foothold. So we kind of saved up our own money at the outset. Corey and I moved to Chicago about 15 years ago. 5 years into that, we saved enough money to buy one camera and one computer and basically did a bunch of work for free. And like I said, struggled for several years until we finally got a foothold, and now we're doing pretty good.
That's awesome, man. So you guys also, just really quickly, did a web series, which we mentioned with Black. So how did you meet Frank Zitti?
Well, Frank is actually the husband of one of our longstanding clients, Elise Zitti, who has a jewelry line, and she's awesome and very talented in and of herself. So we met through Elise. Right away, we loved Frank. Because his favorite movie was Heat, which at the time was pretty much at the top of our list. It was one of those movies where we could kind of like sit down at any point in the movie. It didn't matter where it was, and we automatically had to watch the rest of it, even though it's like 3.5 hours long.
Right.
3.5 days.
It's one of my favorites, too, okay. Man.
So, but anyway, he just has an incredible passion and charisma for filmmaking. He is a 40-year-old, you know, 10-year-old when it comes to his passion for movies. And going to the movies with Frank is like the most exciting experience that you can have. So I recommend it for anybody if you ever have the opportunity to go to the movies with Frank, because it doesn't matter what movie it is, you're going to have a good time just because of his just sheer excitement about it.
I could see that.
Yeah,
having interviewed him a couple times, I could see that.
His passion is most definitely contagious.
Now, be honest with us here, Curtis. Did Frank and his web series Black sort of encourage you guys to come up with the idea of doing a web series and sort of tackling such a large web series? Because this one's much convergence that you guys are working on is a little bit longer than the first Black series.
Yeah, it's definitely way different, and it was not the actual experience of creating Black with Frank that inspired it. It was Frank that inspired it. I mean, he basically is such an incredible individual. He just set that example of just like, you know what? You don't need $1 million to do. $1 million is great, though. Don't get me wrong. So if anybody does have $1 million, we'll take it. That's fine. but, you know, he basically set the tone for us and said, you know, by his actions, just do it. You know what I mean? This is what Corey and I have always wanted to do, you know, is create our own content, of which we have a lot. But time, not so much. You know, we got so wrapped up in the business over the last 10 years, which has been great, and we love it. You know, don't get me wrong. But, you know, it did not afford us a lot of time to explore, you know, the creation of our own stories. But definitely working with Frank and his example, you know, and just the doing it definitely absolutely inspired us to go ahead and forge ahead.
Awesome. And when you read, you know, we were reading the a little bit about Convergence and getting sort of an idea for it. And obviously we started off the show talking about how we read one line in particular when we were trying to pick our top five, and that was that Convergence is X-Files meets the suburbs. And it's such an interesting way of describing a web series. So tell us a little bit about Convergence. I also know it has to do with renewable energy.
Yeah, the backdrop of the story is renewable energy, which is a huge, obviously global, complicated, multifaceted topic. But the story itself is carried out in a very character-driven way, right? So, I mean, Corey and I's favorite movies have always been character-driven. Magnolia is at the top of that list, and series like the 6 Feet Under, you know, just very, very, you know, very much driven by characters. So even though the story itself, like on paper, seems like this kind of gigantic thing, which it is, each episode is very much driven by the characters. So the suburbs part of it is that it's about everyday people under extraordinary circumstances, which would be the X-Files portion of it, because there's definitely a supernatural element fused in.
And how many episodes are we looking at for Convergence?
So right now, season one is three 40-minute episodes. Basically, we're calling it a pilot series.
Okay.
Which I don't know if we're coining that or not. But it starts with a pilot episode, which would be episode one. And on the strength of that, we hope to get the financing for episodes two and three, which would then serve as the pilot series, essentially. And the reason why we call it a pilot series is, you know, we want to be able to demonstrate that not only can we create, you know, an episode and demonstrate production quality, we also want to be able to demonstrate our ability to carry out a series, because there is a formula that we have in mind for the way the series is going to play out. And we want to be able to demonstrate that, and we can only do that by creating, you know, multiple episodes, ideally three.
Now, Frank, obviously with his web series Black, had major success using Kickstarter. I understand you guys are on Kickstarter for Convergence?
We are on Kickstarter, and we started the Kickstarter about 2 weeks ago, and if you go on Kickstarter and search for Convergence, you will find us.
You're giving away some cool prizes, too. Like, if you donate, like, $5, you get this, $10. I saw some of them on there. You got some creative ones.
Yeah, one of the unique things is a portrait, a hand-drawn portrait that you can get. Off the top of my head, frankly, I forget which tier that is. But that's one that's kind of neat. And I think that when you look at all of the tiers that we have, you'll see that, you know, it's all created by artists, and it's all unique. Like the poster, for instance, those are all handmade from recycled newspapers. So when you get the poster, it's kind of a cool thing. We did that to sort of represent kind of the backing of the whole renewable energy aspect.
Awesome. Awesome.
It's a great concept, man. I can't wait to see it.
And how long does the Kickstarter go to for the jawheads at home that want to contribute?
Yeah, well, you've got about 11 days left, so there is a sense of urgency. You know, all of the Kickstarter data tells us that that's when, you know, you really get rolling. So I hope all that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, so I encourage you, jawheads, go out to Kickstarter, search Convergence, and support these guys. There's some great, great rewards available, and I think it's a great project, great idea. And you know what? I am going to support Curtis. I'm going to make a pledge.
Many thank yous for that.
You got it.
For the Jawheads also that want to find out more about Convergence and P3 Media Works, the best place to do so online.
P3MediaWorks.com. That's the letter P and the number 3 and then all one word, MediaWorks.com. And then the best place to go for the series right now is really Kickstarter. That's where you can get the most information. You know, that's where you can help out and help make it happen, too. So that's where I'd love to direct everybody as far as the series goes is to Kickstarter and search for Convergence.
Awesome. It sounds nice. Like such an awesome idea. So I hope all three episodes get made.
Awesome. Thank you. Me too.
Yeah, for sure. So Curtis is sitting in on the rest of the jaw here, Matt. He has his top 5 favorite suburb movies.
I can't wait for this list.
Oh, this is going to be a fun one to do. Mine, I was commenting to Matt earlier, Curtis, came out very dark, actually. I didn't mean that to happen, but I believe they did.
That is the trend when it comes to suburban movies, it seems.
Yeah. Now, Matt is getting us started this week. What do you got sitting at number 5,
there's
buddy?
So many good ones, man. But I'm going to get us started strong with a Roger Corman-produced movie. And this was directed by the very lovely and famous Penelope Spheeris. I'm sorry, I'm mispronouncing her name. She directed Decline of Western Civilization, so she knows a lot about the punk lifestyle, which is in this film. The name of the film is Suburbia. 1984. Flea is in this movie.
There's a big cast in here, and I'm
actually there's not a big cast.
No, there are some people that came out of that movie.
Yeah, Flea. That's about it. Wade Watson from U.S. Bombs.
We'll throw it in the Jawbox. I'm sure there's a few.
How are we gonna throw it in the Jawbox? The Jawbox is in Canada.
Well, I know, but Elias will get us answers from there. This guy's magical.
Well, he is magical. I love this movie. Curtis, have you ever seen Suburbia, the original, the punk rocker one?
I have not yet, but I do know Flea. I'm familiar with him.
Flea's great. The cool thing about this movie, I don't know if it's a cool thing, but the notable thing about this film is the deadpan way in which the actors, and I use the word actor loosely, deliver their lines. I mean, this is Roger Corman, who's not known for quality. But there's this one scene where they're talking about how they were abused as kids, and this is literally how they deliver their lines. It's very monotone, the whole movie. And it's, I don't know why, it was partially because it was such a strange movie, and the other part was I'm really into punk rock.
Sure.
I loved it. Love this movie. Great suburban movie. And it's called Suburbia.
Nice way to kick us off, there you Suburbia. Go. All right, Curtis, what do you got sitting at number 5?
Okay, well, I wanted to start with the most obvious ones first. So my 5, 4, and 3 are the obvious ones. Number and obvious to me, I guess, but maybe nobody else. But E.T. is my number 5.
Nice pick.
It has a lot of scenes in the suburbs.
Yeah, well, it's an awesome kind of blend. And when I thought about it, it's you know, part of the inspiration for Convergence in some way, because it is like that. It's that whole, like, everything's normal, and then all of a sudden everything is completely not normal. So it's an infusion of that sort of supernatural, in this case extraterrestrial, element into what is an absolutely everyday normal environment. And it's just like there's something that just heightens everything about the storyline when you're able to first paint that sort of really just normal setting where nothing's going on, and oh my goodness, what was that? You know?
Yeah, and plus E.T. has one of the best trick-or-treat scenes in movie history.
Oh, absolutely.
No doubt.
And that always reminds me of my childhood, you know, walking around the suburbs trick-or-treating and stuff, so how much fun that was when all the kids were out. Good pick, Curtis, good pick. At number 5, I have a 1999 film. You had a young Josh Hartnett in there. I know one of your favorites, Matt. Also, Kristen Dunst is in there. It was actually her directorial debut. I'm speaking of Sofia Coppola's 1999 film, The Virgin Suicides. Curtis, have you seen this one by chance?
It's been a bit. It was probably 1999 when I saw it.
Sure.
So it's been a minute.
Jodie Foster has a bit part in here, and it's told from the perspective of boys who are looking back. They actually grew up next to the Lisbon sisters, who were 5 daughters of overprotective parents. And I think one of the parents is played by James Woods. And it's obviously called The Virgin Suicides, so I think you sort of know where the movie's going. Very dark film.
They raise a bunch of puppies and kittens. Is that what happens?
And then they have a lemonade stand and all get rich. Right. But again, a very...
Is there a talking raccoon in this?
It's a very, I think, a dark look at, you know, parents being afraid to let their kids sort of experience the world, and they're so protective of them.
Yeah, like Dogtooth.
Yeah, but that's a whole nother movie. That's a great one.
Yeah.
But that was my number five. I recently watched it a couple of years ago and loved it. That was when I thought Sofia Coppola could do no wrong. I had already seen...
She'd only done one movie.
Well, I saw Lost in Translation first, then went back and saw Virgin Suicides. I thought, oh my God, she's going to be the best. But
You know, she's very good. She's had more hits than misses.
We'll see. We're into our fours. Matt, what do you got?
All right. At number four, and this is the only one that is I could be accused of beating up a little too much. I've mentioned this movie a lot. It's one of my favorites of all time. Blue Velvet. And speaking of X-Files, sort of Twin Peaks, mystery, science theater, you know, TV shows, kind of. Blue Velvet, it has the actor from Twin Peaks, and I'm having a brain fart on his name. He's also in Sex and the City.
Throw it in the Jawbox.
Jawbox. I should write these down. But Blue Velvet, oh, the villain in this story. Curtis, I'm assuming you've seen Blue Velvet. Yes? Help me.
Yeah, no, I've seen pretty much everything David Lynch has done.
Thank God.
He's a magical dude.
He is. He really is. And for my money, I think Blue Velvet. I know a lot of people say Mulholland Drive. I prefer Blue Velvet as my favorite David Lynch film, and it's really largely because of the fantastically terrifying, psychotic performance that Dennis Hopper turns in as Frank. Such a memorable character I will never forget. And it all takes place in the burbs, man.
It's a good pick for a summer movie, right?
And it gave me my lifelong love of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Sure did.
What kind of beer do you like? Heineken? Fuck that shit! Pabst Blue Ribbon!
Nice. All right. Curtis, what do you got sitting over there at number four?
I'm going to go Edward Scissorhands. Again,
Sweet.
You know what? Yep, I did not think of this one. I don't know why. This one just totally did not pop into my head when I thought suburb movies, but now that you said it, total suburban film.
It's an honorable for me.
Yeah, no doubt. It really paints the picture of the suburbs in an extraordinary way.
Another really good, it's like a magical realist movie, you know? And the bright colors they use, such a great movie. I haven't seen it in like 10 years. I got to rewatch it.
I'll lend it
to
you.
Yeah, and it's also, it's just a tribute to, I mean, just Johnny Depp, like, I mean, that is just like, of our time, you know, of being alive on this earth at the same time as another person, like, you know, he is just like, in my opinion, just the finest actor in my lifetime. You know what I mean? Just in versatility and just,
well,
yeah, just
Curtis,
what is obviously a sheer passion for what he does. You
Curtis,
know what I mean?
Have you seen The Lone Ranger?
Oh, yeah, touche. Okay.
Have you seen the Pirates movies?
Sure.
Oh, wow.
He's taking a step down. I hear what you're saying. And when I watch Depp in a film like Dead Man Walking, was that what it is? Jesus.
No. Dead Man.
Dead Man. Sorry, just Dead Man.
Dead Man, yeah.
Oh, God, I love that movie. And you're absolutely right. Like, his early stuff, Edward Scissorhands, you know, fantastic. But I'm sad that he hasn't done anything good in the last, I don't know, I'd say 5 years.
Well, you know, when you get older and have kids, I don't even know if he has kids, but I'm just assuming he has based on, you know, some of the choices that he's made recently. Things change. You know what I mean? You got to do that. You got to go down that Disney road all of a sudden for some reason.
Well,
you know,
I mean, I don't think that he's gone down a Disney. I mean, I guess he did with the Pirates, but, you know, he's taken roles like Sweeney Todd and Dark Shadows. And I mean, I guess I can commend him for being a risk taker. He's definitely not boring.
No doubt.
No doubt. I agree.
So you guys are not in agreement, it doesn't sound like, with finest actor of our time.
No, not at all.
I you know, man, and I go out on some big limbs on Cinema Jaw, but
Curtis, I wouldn't have him in my top 25.
Well, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't have him in your top 25?
No.
Oh, wow. I guess I'm not going to be on the show again.
No.
No, we like when guests come on and have good opinions like that.
Hey, you're just a Johnny Depp fan,
yeah,
man. I respect
for sure.
That. And frankly, he probably would be in my top 25.
And it should be noted, that's why Curtis did not join us in studio. He's over the phone because he's in full makeup right now.
That's right.
Johnny Depp-like makeup. All right, swings us over to my number four. And at number four, I have a film came out in 1998. Boy, I love this film, usually for other reasons other than its comment on the suburbs. I'm speaking of the Jim Carrey, I'll just go ahead and call it masterpiece, The Truman Show. And obviously, Laura Linney in there, directed by Peter Weir. And it probably makes more of a comment on reality TV and where it was headed and our fascination with reality television. But also, inside that fake town of Seaside, we also have social commentary on growing up in the suburbs where usually things are not as perfect as they seem. And obviously, that's the case with Truman. Everything is all roses around him, and he buys into that for a long time. But obviously,
he starts to see the cracks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all for show. And I think that's the case with a lot of these movies, is that people out in the suburbs are afraid to show that there's something wrong with their family. And they're having the same issues that everybody else is having on the block. But for some reason, when they walk out to their car, it's all smiles and waves.
Yeah. And spoiler alert, I think it's an old enough film. When he's rowing that boat through the ocean and he hits that wall, it's such a moment. Imagine, it's difficult to put yourself into Truman's shoes, but such a great movie, at the time, a really interesting concept.
It sure was. Ed Harris was fantastic in there as well.
Yeah.
He has the great line of cue the sun.
A role that he's kind of been typecasted in since. I mean, even just recently with Snowpiercer, I feel like he gets that omnipotent, godlike figure, for better or worse, often now.
Yeah. Good point.
I could see Ed Harris playing, you know, just straight up God, like George Burns style.
That was my number four, The Truman Show. We're into our threes. Matt, hit me.
All right. Speaking of Edward Scissorhands, here's another group of would-be automatons, the Stepford Wives.
Are you talking the original?
To be completely honest with you guys, and Curtis, don't judge me. I have never seen the original, but I have seen the Matthew Broderick, Christopher Walken remake.
And that's on your list?
Wow. Well, I think it's the Stepford. I've also read the book, so maybe that counts. I don't know. I think it's the Stepford Wives story in general. And if I have to link it to a film that I've seen, I have to link it to the remake. I'm familiar. I'm aware of the original, but I have not personally sat down and watched it.
Now, I have only seen the remake as well, just like you. I had not read the book, and I thought it was garbage. I hated it.
Well,
Nicole Kidman's in there.
Yeah,
none of it worked for me. I remember watching it and just thinking it was an absolute pile of crap.
That film had a lot of flaws. I really love Christopher Walken in it, though. But the story, I think the concept of the Stepford Wives is powerful enough to make the film work for me, and I enjoyed it because I really enjoyed the book. It's kind of freaking scary. It's almost Invasion of the Body Snatchers like, in a way. These people are being replaced. These women are being replaced by robots, and that's an interesting comment. There's a lot of feminist commentary there, and you know, chauvinism. It's a great movie. There's a lot of subtext, and not the least of which is the perfection that everyone strives for in the suburbs.
Let's make a pact, me and you. Let's watch the original.
I'm down.
All right, I'm down.
That's a pact.
Yeah, hey, that might be our movie pick.
Have you seen it, Curtis?
I was just going to jump in. Wanted to say, I think it's perfectly okay to not see the original of any movie. You know what I mean? I think it's perfectly okay to not really have the desire to watch a movie that was made in 1960 and feel like you have to watch it because you're a film fan. You know what I mean? Like, I love Ocean's 11, but I have absolutely no desire whatsoever to see Sammy Davis Jr. and the rest of the cast in the 1960 whatever version. You know what I mean? I think it's okay to not watch the original.
Well,
sometimes.
I've gone back and forth on this. I'm a guy.
Somebody should have said that to George Lucas.
I'm a guy who likes to seek out the original just because I'm interested to see what the original was. But I know I've talked to people who they don't want to watch a black and white movie. This isn't me. To me, none of that kind of stuff bothers me. So I think it depends what kind of, you know, if you're interested in seeking out the original. But I agree with you, Curtis. It might not be on some of these films absolute must viewing. But, you know, in many cases, it's interesting to see why 30 years later they're remaking the film, because obviously something, you know, touched a nerve with everybody and sort of connected with them.
Yeah, not to beat this topic up too much, but it's interesting, when Godzilla came out earlier this summer, The original Godzilla saw a huge spike in DVD sales and streaming. I know a lot of the podcasts I listen to, all the guests were talking about how they've just rewatched the original 1959 Godzilla, you know, so I agree with you, Curtis. It's definitely not required, but sometimes it's interesting to see what came before. I don't know.
It's no doubt interesting. In fact, one example I'll give, and then we can let the topic die collectively, but one example I'll give is that I actually proactively sought out the first ever documentary. Have you guys seen Nanook of the North?
I have not.
I've heard of it. I've never seen Nanook.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's supposed to be like the first ever documentary. So I'm like, you know what, I should probably watch this, you know, as a film fan. And had no expectations whatsoever going into it, thinking I'd shut it off in 5 minutes. And it is awesome. I mean, it is absolutely amazing. And I won't go into why, because then we'll digress. But just check it out. It's great.
There's a Q-tip, man.
I'm a big documentary fan. I'll check it out for sure.
Awesome. Curtis, what do you got sitting at number three?
Okay, number three, staying obvious, I'm going American Beauty.
Knew this one would come up. Sure. Absolutely. Great pick, man.
Yeah, it's kind of inevitable. You know, I mean, it is like, in a lot of ways, it's one of the best movies of, you know, of the, you know, here I go with best movies and best actors again. I'm just gonna stop right there and just say that
I think it deserves it, man.
It had an impact on me. How about that?
Sure.
And we'll end it there.
We've talked a lot about it on the show, so that's why it's probably not on Matt's list.
That's the only reason it's not on my list is because we've definitely...
It almost wasn't on my list for that very reason, just because it is so prominently obvious.
At number three, I have a movie that is a dark comedy. It's a comedy. It's a horror. It stars Tom Hanks. It's got Carrie Fisher, and it has Bruce Dern. I'm speaking of the 1989 classic film, The Burbs. Curtis, you a fan of The Burbs?
I watched it, and I'm not so much. No, not so much.
I don't know. I don't know how much of a cult following this film quite has, but I know I saw it in the theater and didn't really care for it. I was young, and it just maybe went over my head a little bit, or you know, I just didn't get the humor of the film. And it wasn't until a second viewing that I saw it on home video where I started laughing at everything. I thought the Klopeks were hilarious. I thought the character Bruce Dern plays was hilarious. Corey Feldman. And then since then, it's really become
actually become
my favorite Tom Hanks, like younger Tom Hanks film before he was, you know, Mr. Oscar and making all the big
ones.
Oh, man,
what about Big?
That's what I'm saying. For me, it's The Burbs. I just love The Burbs. I like it more than Big.
Here we go again with you.
Yeah, no, I like it more than I like The Bachelor Party film.
What's wrong with you?
All of them.
Yeah.
It's my go-to, Tom Hanks.
You got a Nook instead of an iPad. You got a Zune instead of an iPod. You got Reeboks instead of Nikes. I could go on and on. Why do you like The Burbs better than Big? What's wrong with you, man? Josh Baskin, for Christ's sake. Josh freaking Baskin.
All because of, I don't know. It's just a superior film, I guess.
Oh, it's a good one. I like that movie. I don't know if it's superior to Big.
All right. That was my number three. We're into our twos. Come on, Matt.
All right. This one is probably one of the rarer films I've ever talked about. I remember watching this when I was very, very young, and it definitely made a big impression on me, and I'll never forget the ending to this movie, which is literally apocalyptic. Not literally apocalyptic, but it is figuratively apocalyptic. The name of the movie is Over the Edge. I don't know if either of you guys are familiar with this. Curtis, have you ever heard of this?
It sounds familiar, but maybe it's just the word edge.
1979, and it is Matt Dillon's feature film debut.
Oh, nice.
And it's about a small town, a suburban town, and the youth have run wild. And it's safe to spoil it. It's 1979. Basically, the town shuts down the teens' rec center, the one place where they feel like they belong. And so the entire town has this emergency meeting because the kids are running wild. And the kids all lock the adults in the building, and then they start blowing up the cars in the parking lot, and they set the whole town on fire. And it's just I remember I must have been like, God, I might have been like 5 years old when I saw this movie, or six. I was at my grandma's house, and I couldn't believe there were little kids with guns, and setting fires. I'm like, this is anarchy. It was my first exposure to like rebellion. And it made a huge impression on me.
I was going to say that explains a lot.
It doesn't it? Yeah, really. And it's funny because I'm starting to learn more about myself from doing the research for these lists. And remembering I saw this movie when I was doing the research, I'm like, oh my God. You know, I haven't thought about this film in so long, but I have to rewatch it now because of this. And it's definitely a big deconstruction of suburbs and how people kind of flee the city to find a better life. But you can take the animal out of the jungle, but you can't take the jungle out of the animal. You know what I mean?
Awesome. Nice pick. We're getting some Q-tips out of Matt K today. I like it.
How about that?
Nice. All right, Curtis, can you follow that up at your number two?
Yeah, I still feel like I'm being obvious, guys. But, you know, when I thought about the list, I'm just like, you know, I'm not going to venture and stray from what are the obvious, because I feel like they're noteworthy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Sure.
That's my disclaimer. Okay, here we go. Donnie Darko.
I don't know how obvious that one is, man. That's a good pick. It's a deep one, I think.
Okay, well, maybe it's just because I've watched it like 150 times that it seems obvious to me.
Curtis,
it's another one of those that I feel like, you know, has that sort of very ordinary setting that just has this, just an unexplainable kind of like unsettling, I don't know, vibe to it. You know, there's this unsettling sort of, obviously there's this unsettling kind of force that's drawing this kid, you know, to do these, you know, these things and into another dimension and all that. But it's just that contrast of that very normal setting with something very extraordinary, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, did it take you more than one viewing to realize how good this film was? I know when I first watched it, I thought it was a solid film, but it wasn't something that I loved until I saw it a second time that I really fell in love with the movie.
You know what it did for me is it gave me, upon, you know, amongst a million other things, obviously, but one of the strange things that just popped in my head is it gave me a whole new respect for Patrick Swayze. Like, he really went on, out, like, completely ventured away from his comfort zone with that role. You know what I mean? And he was awesome in that role. It was just like, I don't know. I really respected him a lot, you know. Because the only Patrick Swayze I ever knew was Dirty Dancing.
Yeah,
you know
sure,
what I mean?
Sure, sure. Nice pick at number two. Hitting some good ones here.
I love that movie, man. Great pick.
At number two, I have a 2008 film directed by Sam Mendes, who also directed American Beauty. So he knows his way around the suburban streets. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And he was also directing his wife at the time, Kate Winslet. They were married. And she also starred opposite her Titanic co-star, DiCaprio, in Revolutionary Road. I know Matt has not
seen
this one.
I've never seen it, no.
Curtis, any chance?
I'm sorry, guys. I have not seen it.
It also has Michael Shannon, and he was nominated for Academy Award.
He was General Zod, was he not?
He was. Yeah. And I tell you, this I thought was one of DiCaprio's strongest performances. Him and Winslet play the Wheelers, who move out to the suburbs to raise a family. But they lose sight of the dreams that they had. She wanted to be an actress. He wanted to do something in particular. I can't remember, but he had his dream. She had hers. But he gets offered a pretty good sales job, and they decide to buy a house in the suburbs and start to raise a family. And they realize that they're sort of losing themselves into, you know, atypical America. And they want to leave and just pick up and say, hey, we're moving to Paris. And they decide that's what they're going to do. And right before that, he gets the chance at a larger promotion if he stays at the job. And, you know, it just doesn't have a happy ending, this movie. It's a very deep film, for sure. So I don't know if you haven't seen it, a couple of strong performances from Winslet and DiCaprio, and just a dark feeling.
I get the feeling, you know, DiCaprio very rarely turns in a happy ending.
Yeah.
I really can't think of any.
He does got some dark films under his belt, for sure.
I mean, Departed definitely did not end well for him. Titanic, not so much.
Boy, oh boy.
Inception, kind of, maybe a little.
I think so.
I don't know if you can call that a happy ending. It was satisfactory.
Yeah, boy, oh boy. All right, and that was my number two, Revolutionary Road. I don't think we've crossed over once.
We have not.
Wow. And here we are in the suburbs where every house is the same, but not our picks, Matt. What do you have as your number one suburban film?
Well, as a matter of fact, I think this is one of my better lists, not to, to pat myself on the back, but maybe it's just my topic. At number one, this film, I dare you guys to argue with this, is a great suburban movie that, that really explores a bunch of different people, different walks of life that live in the suburbs. We get a housewife, a doctor, a teacher, and some familiar archetypes. In the second, I believe it was the second film from the Welcome to the Dollhouse director, whose name is Todd, I'm going to mess up his last name, Solondz. That's what I'm going with. Todd Solondz, Happiness.
I still need to see this one.
Oh, man, you really need to see it.
I know you've mentioned it before.
Curtis, have you seen this?
Did you say Happiness?
I did.
I have not, I don't think.
Okay. It's it's funny and terrifying at the same time. Another film, I mean, it almost comes close to, I don't know, like Fargo-ish in a sense. But there's, I mean, it deals with topics like pedophilia, and then it deals with topics like baseball and parenthood and regular everyday life. And there is this one scene where one of the characters is outed as a pedophile. And he has this very honest discussion with it, about it, with his son. And the dialogue in this scene between a pedophile and his son is just so freaky. It's weird and honest and hard to wash out of your mind afterward. It's a film that will stick with you for a very long time after watching it. And I think it's a big misnomer to title the film Happiness. But again, that's kind of what everybody's after in the movie.
Nice.
In the suburbs, too, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a great movie, man. And I love this director. Welcome to the Dollhouse is great, too.
I'd call it a Q-tip, but it's already on my queue from another episode. I know I have this one down.
You got to see it.
Nice. Nice number one, Matt.
Thank you.
I believe Philip Seymour Hoffman's in there as well.
He is, so yeah.
There you go. See, I think it came up when we were talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Probably.
Yes. All right. I know it's in my head. All right. It throws a... throws us over to Curtis's number one. What do you got sitting there, buddy?
Okay, well, here's where I'm going to stray from the obvious. In that I mean that this film doesn't even take place in the suburbs. And I'll explain why after I reveal what it is, I guess. But it's Into the Wild.
I see where you're going here.
So, yeah, I mean, it's basically everything that's not the suburbs. And it's this kid who came from that environment, and it was everything about that environment that pushed him, you know, that basically motivated his journey. And so, I don't know, guys, maybe I just love the movie so much that I'm stretching on this one. But I don't know, it makes sense in my mind, you know, that it's basically inspired by the suburbs.
Well,
you know?
Well, go ahead, Matt.
I get what you're saying, because it's really the suburbs that drove him into the wild, you know? He was driven out, so he wouldn't have gotten there had it not been for this mundane existence in the burbs.
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. Have you guys both seen it?
I have.
I have. And you know what? I did want to make one comment that I had a problem with it the second time I watched it. It was just recently. I love the concept of the movie. I think that the story is good. I overall enjoy the film. Eddie Vedder's score in the movie is excellent. My problem actually is with Emile Hirsch. Not that he's terrible, but I think the movie actually could almost been a masterpiece if it was a little bit stronger of an actor. I think he was just a little weak, and that's why the movie for me didn't resonate as much as it did with others.
What else has he done? He's been in a few other films.
Yeah, but after Into the Wild, he sort of has tailed off a little bit here lately, but we'll look it up.
Okay. Jawbox.
Yeah. All right, swings us into my number one. At number one, I have the 2006, oh my goodness, back-to-back Kate Winslet movies.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Ryan.
What are the odds?
Yeah, what are the odds?
This Kate Winslet movie also stars Jennifer Connelly, Patrick Wilson, Jackie Earle Haley, and was directed by Todd Field.
Watchmen.
I'm speaking of Little Children.
Oh. Not The Watchmen.
No, not The Watchmen. But this, Little Children, is the reason why Jackie Earl Haley came back and made his explosion. He was nominated for an Academy Award here and then got all the roles subsequent after that. Winslet here plays a stay-at-home mom who ends up having an affair with Patrick Wilson, who is a stay-at-home dad. And meanwhile, that Jackie Earl Haley actually plays this like total freaky guy. He can't play not a freaky guy, right? Who just gets out of prison and moves back in with his mom in the neighborhood. And he was in prison for exposing himself to kids. And he has a problem with this. And there's a lot to dig into in this movie. And there's a lot of, I guess, all the characters are doing something wrong. But they're all so worried about, you know, Jackie Earl Haley's character because... You know, he has this problem of exposing himself, and
he's a flasher.
Yeah, and is he going to take advantage of kids, and you know all this stuff? Even though there's people having affairs, there's you know other things going on. There's another character like addicted to porn and pays no attention to his wife, and it all comes to a head at the end of the movie, and it's really got social commentary on multiple issues of stuff that's going on that for some reason it seems in the suburbs you can turn a blind eye. Towards maybe a friend of yours that's doing something wrong. But if a neighbor on your block is doing something, it's all the gossip in the neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. If you guys haven't seen Little Children, I actually own the film. I haven't rewatched it since I saw it in the theater, but it's on my shelf. I will be watching it soon.
Got a quick honorable. Couple of them.
Go.
All right. The Simpsons. Simpsons film. Poltergeist. And how about Serial Mom, John Waters?
There you go.
Pussy willows, Dottie. Are those pussy willows?
Are those pussy willows?
Dried ones. Aren't they pretty?
What did you just say?
Pussy willows, Dottie.
Oh, my goodness.
I got a couple of honorables. Also, The Joneses. This was a new David Duchovny Demi Moore film, which I would actually say is not all that good, but they're just basically move into the suburbs and are basically paid to drive around in cool sports cars and clothes that gets all the other neighborhood people to buy those particular products.
Keeping up with the Joneses.
Pretty,
right?
I just like the concept. Pleasantville with Reese Witherspoon.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, actually, a really good movie.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. And finally, just sort of like a fun one with Shia LaBeouf called Disturbia, which was a total take on Rear Window, but he's trapped in his house. And,
right.
You know, same type of concept, but a fun watch.
Yeah.
So, any honorables for you, Curtis?
How about The Incredibles?
Yeah.
Hey, not bad. Yeah.
I'm a father of a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old. So, you know, God bless Pixar, I've got to say, you know, because without them, you know. But, I don't know. It's just a highly entertaining movie. It sort of takes place in the suburbs because they're forced to move there, you know, after the big fallout. But, yeah.
I mean, there's one scene in particular where he lifts the car over his head in a fit of rage.
Exactly.
And the little kid is on his big wheel at the end of the driveway. And he's like, what? Nothing to see, you know? Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. And the bubble explodes on his face.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Jawheads, if we missed your favorite suburb movie and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We will retweet it and get the discussion going. What we're going to do is take a quick break. And when we come back, Curtis will be judging a cinema war. Plus, he will take Matt on in expendable movie trivia. Wow. Before we go, Matt, too, we had call-ins from various guests last week. Want to thank them all once again, congratulating us on our 200th. And I believe Stephen Ogg called in.
Yeah.
And we wanted to play his this week. So
Trevor from Grand Theft Auto, man.
It was pretty cool.
It is.
So we'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
All right there, kids. Stephen OGG calling. Trevor, GTA. Listen, what a delight. We had such a good time talking cinema and all that. And I hope we get to do it again real soon. Congratulations on your big number. It's big. It's big to be big. Feels good to be big. Good to be big.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Curtis Gilbert. creator and also still runs P3 Media Works over there. They have the web series in the works, Convergence. And again, they are doing a Kickstarter for it. Best place, again, for the Jawheads to go, Curtis, if they want to support?
The best place to go is Kickstarter and to search for Convergence.
Awesome. And we're going to have a link in our show notes as well.
Appreciate it.
Awesome. Before we get to trivia, before we get to Cinema War, I don't know if Elias threw this paper airplane, but a paper airplane came flying through the window.
Wow, that's a really good throw from Canada.
Unbelievable. And on there, he has a couple of jaw notes.
This guy's amazing.
I swear to you.
How did he get it out of that little hole?
I have no idea. This Elias, I tell you. First off, he says, Blue Velvet actor that was also in Sex and the City, Matt.
Yeah.
Kyle MacLachlan.
Oh, Kyle MacLachlan. Sure, yeah. And
is that him?
That's him.
Elias has got it right?
This guy's unbelievable.
He also says somebody had asked, I think it was you, Curtis, does Johnny Depp have kids?
I did ask that. What's the status?
He does have two kids. He has one son and
one
daughter.
How did he hear Curtis?
I don't know.
This room is
bugged. Elias has listening devices hidden in the Cinema Jaw equipment.
Even when he's not present, he still comes through for us, Matt.
It's crazy.
Matt, it brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt bet on a topic each week. And our guest this week, Curtis Gilbert, gets to play judge, jury, and executioner and tell the Jawheads at home who he thinks won this Cinema War. And it's important because me and Matt are battling for 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Now, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is coming out, and Matt was a big fan as a kid, so of course he's a big fan as an adult.
Because I never grow up.
Tonight's Cinema War is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie going to be a huge hit or a huge flop? Matt, you'll be battling for a huge hit. Me, Rye, I'm battling it's going to be a huge flop. Let the Cinema War begin.
Ryan, I must be honest and tell you that when I heard Michael Bay was at the helm of the new TMNT project, I thought, here he goes again, raping my childhood once again, casting Megan Fox, and early reports that the Turtles would be of alien origin were no help. But slowly, we learned that Bay was not directing, and every new clip was better than the last. And now, Turtle Fever is at full pitch, and I am 10 years old once again, and I can't wait for my next fix. It's going to be huge.
Out of that entire argument that you just said there, Matt, all I heard were these words, Megan Fox and full pitch. All right, here we go. Matt, what are we, like 10 during this argument? Are we 10? Are we going to be trading baseball cards after this is over? It should be noted Matt picked this argument, and I think it's ridiculous. Look, the Turtles here, they had their time, all right? They had their spotlight, and that was great. I'm happy for them. But to bring this back as a live-action film in 2014 with Megan Fox in it, bad idea.
I think it's going to be awesome. Ryan, films like Guardians of the Galaxy prove that a majority of the audiences just want to have fun. Will this be the next Lawrence of Arabia? No, but it will be one shell of a good time.
Oh, a shell of a good time. Let me tell you something here, Matt. Raphael, Michelangelo, And the whole gang were cool to kids back in the day, but I can only take nostalgia so far. Turtles wearing masks, each with a unique weapon and a unique mask, sounds also silly to me. Once the studio sees that this is not a hit that they had hoped for, the reboot series will die.
Look, this argument is about will it be a hit, not will it be good. And in that regard, I have two words for you. Transformers. These films make money, plain and simple. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has survived nearly 30 years as a pop cultural phenomenon for a reason. People love these characters, and a whole new generation is about to get a dose of turtle power.
Oh, that's what a joke. All right, Matt, we just raved about how great Guardians of the Galaxy is, and I think the positive word of mouth is actually this weekend going to keep Guardians at the top of the box office, and that's going to help kill the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles possible potential.
You know what? I'm gonna finish up with a Splinter quote. Ready? Death comes for us all, Orokusaki, but something much worse comes for you. For when you die, it will be without honor.
What is that? I don't even know what kind of comeback I can have from that. Excuse me, Matthew,
yeah,
for not getting excited about Mutant Turtles movie. I've never liked them. I never will. I like to have fun at the movies, but the Turtles' time is done. Let it die. I would not see it if Woody Allen directed it. Well, maybe then I would have to say, cowabunga.
Cowabunga, dude! Let's have some
pizza. Wow. That's right. They ate pizza. See, it's all coming back to me. I am not much of a Turtles fan. While we're button heads here, as always, I hope Curtis isn't a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan. What'd you think of the cinema order there?
Well, I got to be honest with you. I'm a little biased on this one. I also am not a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan. So I think you guys know where this is going. Yeah, Ryan, I got to agree with you and side with you on this one. But not only because I don't like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Oh, sorry, I stepped on the...
No, keep going. Fine.
Not only because I don't like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but I just, like, really? Like, it's 2014. We're going to put them in costumes? Is that it? That's it, right? They're going in costumes?
No, it's CG.
It's made to look like they're in costume, I guess, is the best way to say it. It looks different. I don't know.
It's CG, man.
It is?
Yeah.
It is CG. Okay. Well, then I think it has a chance to be a hit, unfortunately, but I hope it's not. Is that...
I'm right with you.
Okay. So I guess Ryan is the way I'm going.
Awesome.
It's going to be big, guys. But go ahead, Ryan. You won. You earned your 20 seconds.
Thank you. I just want to say this. A, number one, if you're going to see the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or the Transformers, all because you're looking for this nostalgia, I don't know why people like you, Matt, you got to hold on to it so much. It's okay to let these things go. I used to like playing with Matchbox cars, but I don't go see Cars 2, 3, and 4 all because they got talking cars when I used to pretend my cars were talking. So mature a little bit here, Matt, and check out an interesting film. Maybe like when Inherent Vice comes out, you'll come and see the new Paul Thomas Anderson movie with me. And you'll have not only see it with me, but you'll have the enthusiasm you do for talking mutant Ninja Turtles. That bothers me. You're so excited for that, and yet there's masterpieces coming out that Matt could give a rat's ass about.
Pizza Dude's got 30 seconds.
All right.
Oh, never going to grow up.
No, man. I agree. Oh, boy. So it brings us to trivia. And The Expendables number 3 is coming out. Have you guys seen the cast for this? He's added even more Expendables.
It's ridiculous at this point.
It is. I have yet to see any of the Expendables movies. I have a feeling Curtis has seen them, and he's seen them with Frank Zitti. Do I have that right?
No, I've not had the pleasure yet. Although, if I spent more time with Frank, I would call that inevitable.
I know. I know Frank loves the Expendables.
He's got to.
So in honor of Expendables 3, we are playing Expendables movie trivia. It works like this.
That's half the actors in Hollywood, man.
I know. It's a lot to choose from.
It's like 25 people in the cast.
It works like this. Curtis, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals, and if someone gets hung up on one of the questions, you get one rescue. Rescue me, Ryan. I have clues to all the questions.
Don't let me see those.
No. Okay. Curtis, you want to go first or let Matt go first?
Let's go with Matt first.
All right. Question number one over to Matt. Matt, Dolph Lundgren starred as a Russian boxer in Rocky III.
I would break you.
What was the character's name?
His name was Ivan Drago.
1-0, Matt K. Question number 2 over to Curtis. Curtis, 2 times Jason Statham has played assassin Chev Chios, who learns he's been injected with poison that will kill him if his heart rate drops. Name the film series.
I don't know.
It's Jason Statham, and his heart rate cannot drop.
It's not the Bourne Identity series, is it?
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Matt, you got a chance for a steal here.
Crank.
2-0, Matt K. Curtis, I have not seen the Crank series either. Have you?
Well, clearly I haven't seen the Bourne Identity series either. Again, going back to not spending enough time with Frank Zitti.
Oh, I love it. Question number 3 is over to Matt. He is winning 2-0. Matt, this Expendable starred in 2001's The One, in which he fights an alternate universe version of himself who grows stronger with each alternate self he kills. Name him.
Jet Li.
Wow, 3-0, Matt K. He loves his Expendables movie trivia.
Who knew? I've not seen any of the Expendables either.
All right, question number 4 over to Curtis. We need a comeback here, buddy. Mel Gibson starred in The Patriot. What now deceased actor played his son, Gabriel, in the film?
Okay. I'm having, like, that brain thing.
Sure.
There it is. Come on, brain.
Well done.
Yeah, he is on the board. He is on the board. It is now...
Wait, can I hear the clue, what the clue would have been for that question?
He's a total joker.
Yeah, okay. Well, you should have said, why so serious?
Even more of a giveaway. Yeah. All right, here we go. It is 3-1. Matt K. is still a commanding lead. Question 5 is over to him. Matt, which Expendable starred in Gallo Walkers in 2012 playing a cursed gunman whose victims come back from the dead?
There's so many to choose from. Rescue Me Ryan.
Oh, my. Rescue Me Ryan. Question number 5. Who starred in the 2012 film Gallo Walkers? And your clue was, recently spent some time in jail.
Recently spent some time in jail. Literally or in the movies?
Literally.
Oh. Mel Gibson? But he spent some time in jail.
Well, he wasn't in this one. All right, we throw it over to Curtis. You have a chance for a steal here. The name of the film was Gallo Walkers. Which Expendable starred in that movie? And he also spent some time in jail.
Spent some time in jail. Mickey Rourke? Is he in that?
Wow, we were looking for Wesley Snipes.
Oh, sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, is he back?
He is back.
Why couldn't
you get that movie?
I don't think he is, no. But, I mean, the clue sucked. I mean, why couldn't it have been something like he's a demolition man?
Hey, that would have been pretty good.
Yeah, because then it's a kind of a toss-up. You could have said Sylvester Stallone.
Right. Hey, not bad.
Or he has jungle fever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Hey, either way, the score remains 3-1, and this one's over to Curtis. Curtis, this Expendable starred in 2011's The Skin I Live In as a brilliant plastic surgeon haunted by past tragedies. Name him. And you do have a rescue if you need it.
Okay. Well, I may as well use it now.
Whoa! A rescue. Rescue Me Ryan. Question number 6. Who starred in The Skin I Live In? Your clue is this, Curtis. Don't be a puss. Don't be a puss.
That's my clue?
Yeah, that's your clue.
Oh, okay.
There is a clue in there. You gotta dig deep for it, though.
I'm going to go ahead and just not know the answer.
Matt, you got a chance for a steal here.
I actually knew the answer to this. I had a long discussion about this film. Yeah, the clue is great. He was alluding to Puss in Boots, Antonio Banderas.
Wow, commanding lead at this point. 4-1. And question number 7 is over to Matt. Matt, last year, Stallone and Arnold teamed up to make this movie about a prison break.
Oh man, yeah, that's the one with the school bus and the minigun. Wasn't it like Last Man's? I forget. Last something, right?
Curtis, you got a chance for a steal here. Stallone, Arnold, trying to break out of prison.
It's Escape something, isn't it? Escape?
You got a good plan going here, Curtis. Escape.
Oh, that's charity. But I'll take it. Escape plan. Okay.
It's okay, because it's the last question of the game, so Matt Kay has won this one, because it is 4-2. You can only get to 3 here, Curtis, but save some face. Arnold starred in this 1999 film in which Satan, yes, Satan, visits New York in search of his bride.
Is that to me?
Yeah.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, 1999, Satan visiting New York.
Yep.
Oh, no, it's Satan.
Okay. Man, how do these things happen without me knowing them?
You got to check this one out. It's a great film.
Yeah, I'm gonna pass it on. I'm done.
Know this one at all, Matt?
Was it The Seventh Day?
Close. Actually, that's The Sixth Day, but the answer was The End of Days.
End of Days.
End of Days. Okay, yes. That sounds... Maybe I just didn't know the premise.
Matt Kay wins this one, 4-2. Virtual handshake.
Virtual handshake.
Good one.
All right. Hey, if there was a jawbreaker, if it was a tie, what it came down to this. Over to you, Curtis. In a real life battle royale match, which expendable gets thrown out of the ring first?
Is this a hypothetical?
No, it's an absolutely real question. You got to take it as seriously as possible.
Who gets thrown out first?
Well, yeah.
I hope it's Wesley Snipes.
No, that's not right.
Give him that one.
It's Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah. Poor Harrison Ford.
Broken leg. Yeah. Get out of my ring.
The real jawbreaker was this. Age of Jet Li, closest to. Matt, you got a guess?
43 years old.
Ryan, lock him in at 43. Curtis, you got a guess?
I'm going to go with the strategy of Wheel of Fortune or whatever, where you go one more or whatever that show is. Price is Right, 44. Yeah.
We'd give 40. That to Curtis. Believe it or not, he's 51.
Jesus, really?
He's aging well.
Yeah, he looks great. I mean, he's no Jackie Chan, but he's doing well.
Sure is. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Brings us to the end of a great jaw already, Matt.
Yeah, indeed. I got to say thank you, Curtis, for joining us on this episode, man. And tell us one more time where the fans can check out Convergence and all the other stuff you're up to.
Definitely, yeah. So the show is it's Convergence, and you can check it out on Kickstarter. You can search for Convergence, and we'd love to hear your thoughts.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on, Curtis.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yep, we also got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to the new 400 theaters.
Yeah, and also thanks to Redbox Instant. If you go to our website, cinemajaw.com, you'll see an ad for Redbox Instant. It's the same as Netflix, guys. Unlimited streaming at home, but to help you out with the new releases, they give you four codes for rentals at their kiosks, which are everywhere, and you get those every single month through your email. And the best part is this. You click on that ad, you try their service for free, and you help out CinemaJaw at the same time.
That's a win-win-win.
Also, we got to thank the best engineer in the biz, even though he's in Canada, Elias Rodriguez.
Well, he did have that amazing shot with the
paper. Hey, that was awesome. Thanks, Elias. And right around now, Elias would come on and be like, thank you, guys.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks.
Hello, fellows.
Yeah, that was a good impression.
So until next week, check us out on Facebook,
follow us on Twitter,
and keep on jawing about the movies.